But a lakeshore type valuation.
The Senate Agriculture and Veterans Budget and Policy Committee will come to order. Members, the first issue on our agenda today is a confirmation of Gene Hugesson, Commissioner of the Department of Agriculture. Mr. Hugesson, do you want to step up there and tell us a little bit about you and, like I asked the other one, why you want to continue on doing it? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, my name is Gene Hugesson, Commissioner of Minnesota Department of Agriculture. It indeed is a privilege and a pleasure to be back here. I was just here, was it last week, I think, talking about some energy issues, but this issue is obviously about whether I continue in my position as Commissioner of Agriculture. I have to tell you that there's probably, from my perspective, not a better job for somebody that loves agriculture than the one I have. And I guess the big question is, why would I want to not do it? And for me, it's an opportunity to be part of an industry and a way of life, a group of people that I think are very, very top-notch. That is the farming community, the processing industry. It's a chance to work in state government, which I thoroughly enjoyed from my time in the legislature. For me, I also still keep actively involved with the farming operation. For those of you that perhaps aren't aware, I farm about 600, a little over 600 acres in Martin County in south central Minnesota. I do it literally on weekends when the weather cooperates. Otherwise, I obviously find somebody to do the work for me. But I do it for the reason, not that I necessarily need something else to do, but it for me, believe it or not, it actually is a form of relaxation. But it also is a way of actually staying in touch with what's going on, because there's something about sitting in line at the elevator at midnight with some other farmers as you're waiting to unload grain that helps you with a perspective of what really goes on out there, or to listen to some of the problems and concerns that your neighbors have and can experience them firsthand as well. But it's also obviously the opportunity to promote what I think is just a oftentimes unrecognized part of our state and national economy that contributes a tremendous amount to what goes on in the way of life of people in this state. And certainly as it relates to where we are with energy issues, I think people are finally starting to realize that agriculture indeed does play and can play an important role in what happens in the people's future of this state. The mission of the Department of Agriculture, which obviously I've had an opportunity over the last 11 and a half years to be involved with, is really talking about working toward a diverse agricultural industry that is profitable and environmentally sound to protect public health and safety regarding food and agricultural products and to ensure orderly commerce in agriculture and food products. So it's the kind of thing that whether we're talking about farmers markets right next door to where the farm products are maybe raised, or if we're talking about international trade to the other side of the world, it's something that agriculture is intimately involved with for reasons of our own profitability, but certainly the opportunity to share the abundance that the American farmer, in this case the Minnesota farmer, does produce and can share with people around the world. Certainly as it relates to the kinds of things we've been doing with energy issues here in Minnesota and the leadership taken, I think it speaks a lot to what's the perseverance and the forethought that Minnesota farmers have had in place. Mr. Chairman, members, you may have heard, we just released a report yesterday talking about the ethanol industry in Minnesota, a kind of an update of the economic impact that, in fact, this industry has. And just sharing a couple things with it before I turn it over for questions. It's remarkable, really, what this industry has done. We are generating nearly because of the direct and indirect economic impact of ethanol, nearly $2.8 billion a year in the state's economy. And over 10,000 jobs can be directly or indirectly attributable to the ethanol industry. That's based on the 16 plants that we have online that are producing 620 million gallons of ethanol. But we look at the 5 new plants that are already under construction in various capacities, that will put us over 1 billion gallons by the end of 2008. And so the economic impact will only increase in that area. And as I mentioned last week, certainly while it's been mostly the ethanol people themselves that have benefited up to this point, now it's really the whole farming community in rural Minnesota that's benefiting from this as well. The interesting thing in terms of this, and the question I know comes up in terms of where we are with corn utilization in this, that under the current scenario, in with the 16 plants that we have, 57% of the corn that we raise still leaves the state of Minnesota to go to other states or other countries. And once those new plants are up and running, where we will be over 1 billion gallons of ethanol produced in this state, we will still be at the 45% level of corn being shipped out of Minnesota to other states or other countries. Livestock consumes about 17% of the state's corn, and even now with the ethanol plants that we have, we're still only slightly over 15% of the corn crop. At one time, we were thinking we were going to be at 20% of the corn crop being utilized, but the good news there is that our corn yields, our corn amount of corn that we produce, keeps growing. And so the numbers have increased enough to meet that need, so that percentage-wise, we're still at a little over 15% of our corn being utilized for the ethanol industry at this point. Mr. Chairman, members, many of you know me some ways. If some of you are curious or interested on various aspects of where I stand or on various issues, I certainly would be welcome. I would welcome any questions that you might have. Again, just to reiterate, I've appreciated the opportunity that I've had to work with the Senate Ag Committee folks over the past 11 years and look forward to another 4 years as well.
Let the record show our quorum is present. Senator Dale.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I've always been a little bit turned off by these net worth statements that you see that these public officials have to submit for so the public knows what they're really worth. And when we had the U.S. Congressional and U.S. Senate races this last fall, I looked at the net worth of the various candidates and so forth, and it was kind of unbelievable the way it was reported. It was, you know, they report so many liabilities between a long, you know, wide range and the assets on a wide range, and it kind of looked like Mark Kennedy had a net worth of about $50,000, which is kind of hard to believe. Amy Klobuchar was listed around $2 million, and it was just very hard to really interpret what all those numbers really meant. And then Congressman Betty McCollum had a net worth somewhere around $11,000, and that's pretty hard to believe too. Now here we've got another situation where it's kind of hard to believe. We've got a Commissioner of Agriculture who's farming 600 acres, and it says it in Martin County he's got a couple parcels of land which he doesn't own, he doesn't have a mortgage on, he doesn't have a contract for deed on it, and it totals up to 7.36 acres. How can that possibly be accurate?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dill, if you look at what is required there, it's talking about non-homesteaded land that is reportable there. My farm, the land that I own, is homesteaded, and so that's not listed per se. I do own a building spot that's outside of the homestead area, which is where my wife grew up and where my son lives now. That's that 7.63 acres or whatever it shows there. So out of the 600 acres that I farm, so it's actually 660 acres, about a third of it I own, a third of it I belongs to my father-in-law, and a third of it to my father. In other words, those are the two-thirds that I rent. And the third that I own, I still am paying on. So I can experience indebtedness like any other good Minnesota farmer.
But, Mr. Chairman and members, wouldn't it be better to have a request for information that more accurately reflects what the real situation is here, to have the Commissioner of Agriculture showing up with only 7.3 acres of land which he doesn't own?
I do own that.
But under the ownership line, it just says no. There's two no's there. It says you don't own it. And you don't have a contract for deed on it. You don't have a mortgage.
To me, it's
very, very confusing and not very accurate.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dale, maybe that's something we need to take up with the State Ethical Practices Board in terms of how that information is requested and or reported. But for the record, the land that I own is the farm where I live and some adjacent acreage to it, and the rest of the land and then that building spot, which there is no indebtedness on that building spot. But the rest of it I rent.
Just one more comment. If I was a Republican former corporate executive running for the U.S. Senate and had my net worth listed at $50,000 and my Democratic opponent had a $2 million net worth, I'd be embarrassed.
Senator Langseth.
Well, Mr. Chair, just to follow up on that, I was reading Congressman Colin Peterson's net worth, and I told him, I said, you are obviously a total failure because it was almost nothing. And then he said, well, there's this I didn't have to report and this I didn't have to report and this I didn't have to report. So what he reported was a small fraction of what he was worth. But North Dakota must be different because when Bud Sinner ran for governor, he was Democrat, he had $1.75 million worth of assets and zero liabilities. And I thought, for a Democrat, that's pretty darn good.
Mr. Chair.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Wergen.
So, Senator Langseth, are you truly the party of the rich?
I think so. We're conservative.
Okay.
No liabilities.
Mr. Chair.
Wergen.
Commissioner Hugesson, I think what I've most appreciated about you is coming here and watching how fair you are. I've seen you look at both sides of an issue between large farming and small farming. I've seen you carry on the delicate balance of local control and sound agricultural practices and protecting the environment. I haven't seen you shy away from any of the issues that are fun, like alien ownership of farmland. And I have really appreciated that. You've been good to come to for information. Your department has always been helpful, and I've appreciated that a lot in the short time that I've been here. And so, Mr. Chair, with pleasure, I would move that we move forward the reappointment or recommissioning of Commissioner Hugesson for the Department of Agriculture.
Any other questions? Members,
second that?
I've known a commissioner for a long time.
Did she move it?
Commissioner, we've watched ethanol come from a little bit of a gallon up to millions of gallons. And we're going into a different direction now with cellulose and everything else. It's going to be trying times, challenging times. I, for one, am glad you decided to stay, so I can quit looking the paper and see who's going to be it. Now I already know who's going to be it. Commissioner, because we need to work together seriously and move it along. And I was looking at this thing here, and it says, Senator, he's the chair of the agriculture, veterans, gosh, gaming. Must be farmers a gambler. It always has been. So I'm going to have to get that taken off of here. So I'm waiting for a motion.
I did move.
Did you do it, Betty?
I did.
Excuse me, I shouldn't
say
that. That's Senator Wergen moves the confirmation of Gene Hugesson, the Commissioner of the Department of Agriculture. Is there any discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Again, I reiterate, I look forward to continued working together. Senator Wergen, I appreciate the comments. I think if I've left any legacy or if I leave any legacy at the department, it'll be the good staff that is there. These people are truly dedicated to agriculture in all forms. Minnesota has a very diverse agricultural system, and that's great. It's our strength. And that's the sort of thing that we need to see continue. So, and one of my challenges is always to get people to understand that it may not be something they like, but they need to respect each other's viewpoints because everybody's entitled to pursue their dream as they see it.
Commissioner, for one who's been here for a while, I know how important our staff is. And I'd like to have you introduce your legislative liaison, if you could.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, I would just maybe mention, too, that for those of you that are perhaps aware that we currently do not have a deputy commissioner at the Department of Agriculture right now. Perry Osnes was the deputy. He went over to the FSA office to be the state director of the Farm Service Agency, USDA. And so, but we still have two assistant commissioners, Jim Borboom, who's Jim, I think, is here, and then Joe Martin, who I don't believe is here, the other assistant director. But Quinn Cheney, I'd ask her to come up at this point, too, just so she could introduce her to the committee, because she is the person that will be following all the committees for those times when I can't be here myself, and certainly is the person that any of you feel free to stop and request information from, and she certainly is energetic and able to pass along requests of anybody that needs any information or help, that sort of thing as well. So Quinn has had experience in the governor's office working with agriculture at that level. She spent some time at the Canadian consulate, so she has some understanding of some international issues also. She's originally from Indiana, but we still, you know, we can overlook some of those things. Not Indiana? Did I goof? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Illinois. But I'm a born Minnesotan.
Born Minnesotan. Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, and then, of course, we do have Paul Strandberg, I think, who many of you know also, having been time on the Senate Ag staff at one time and also at the Attorney General's office, is one of our people that works in the Commissioner's office also and works with some of the policy issues and is available for help along some of these areas. And he's our resident historian, so if we have any questions, we go to Paul in that regard.
Further discussion? You told me not to ask a lot of questions, so I think I'll honor that because you said you might get nervous, so we'll just kind of we'll wait before you come before us again, and then we'll really.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Now we're going to go, Commissioner, we're going to go right into the budget overview, if that's okay.
Certainly. And,
members, I'm going to have to turn the gavel over to my vice chair because I'm going to be on an airplane before too long, and we're going to Washington. All of the chairs, of the agriculture chairs in the United States, are going to meet out there for a two-day meeting, and I thought I wasn't going to go, and then I thought, you know, we should go so we can keep up with what's going on. So, and I've got excellent vice chair. Ropes, if you will come up here, I'm going to turn it over to you, and you can ask Gene all kinds of questions if you like. I'll see you.
I will.
Thanks for waiting for us to readjust here a little bit. And Commissioner, if you want to proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the Ag Committee. Just in terms of, I'll make up just a very few brief comments as it relates to the budget and then turn it over to Steve Ernst, our budget director and head of the finance division, who I think some of you do recall, remember from a few years past having worked with your committee as well. Madam Chair, members, the budget for the Ag Committee this year does not include any cuts from anything in the past. In fact, actually includes some increases in certain areas. I recall, if you've been here for a little while, that we went through some very severe cuts 4 years ago as part of the $4.5 billion problem that the state faced at that particular time. 2 years ago, Governor Pawlenty had decided not to make any cuts in ag, even though some other agencies did have some cuts. And then now this year, we're back looking at some increases in some of the program areas that we're facing some challenges in, but also certainly as it relates to the positive thing as it relates to renewable energy. So that's where some of the increases that certainly are there as well. But, Madam Chair, members, maybe just to facilitate things, and I will be around here, stay around here to answer some questions, too, but I would respectfully turn it over to Steve Ernst to walk through the budget for you, and we'd be happy to either Steve or myself or any of the rest of us that are here try to answer some questions that you may have along the way.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Ernst?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Steve Ernest. My name is Steve Ernest, Financial Management Director with the Department of Agriculture. So I'll walk you through the budget document, give you the highlights, and point out some of the key numbers and aspects of the budget and the highlights of the change items also. To start with, I did hand out a couple of graphs there to give you a big picture view of where the money comes from and where it goes to. On the top of that graph, you can see the general fund. I split into two pieces because our ethanol program and now ethanol and cellulosic energy is a large part of our general fund appropriation. This is the governor's budget, so $10 million of the $40 million on the ethanol side is for the new Jurassic Energy Next Gen initiative. And the dedicated revenues part there is mostly our agricultural fund, the fees we collect for inspections and certifications and licensing. That's $35 million approximately of that $53 million. And then we get $12 million in grants from the federal government. And before I leave where money comes in, I think I would like to skip just to the back of the budget book for a second. On page 63, it lists all the revenues that our agency brings in. For the biennium, we expect we'll bring in approximately $80 million. $12 million of that is the federal grants that are listed on the chart there. At the very top, $6 million comes into the general fund from licensing and inspections we do. This is almost all, about 90%, from food inspection activities. So when we get to the spending side of it, you'll see that the food and dairy inspection division has a lot of general fund, and it also brings money to the general fund. It's more of a mix between fees and general fund than some of the others, or relies more heavily on the general fund than some of the others, because food safety is more of a general responsibility for the state to protect the public in general. Then you'll see their agricultural fund there, $30 million. And I'll point out one other one under other revenues, miscellaneous special revenue. This is mostly our indirects that we collect, agency indirects from the non-general funds. The general fund pays for agency-wide responsibilities itself, and then the agricultural fund and federal funds get charged an indirect rate, and it goes through the special revenue account. So that's what most of that is. And flipping back to the charts that I just handed out, on the bottom part of that page, you can kind of see, just by eyeing it, the dual nature of our agency. Half of our money, at least, goes towards protection, inspection, the regulatory side, the making sure things are safe and wholesome and working right. And then the other half is our promotion and development side. We've got our ethanol and energy programs, but a lot of other marketing programs. We've been recently working on marketing turkeys in China, for instance. In the last 5 years or so, we've been given the international marketing responsibilities that weren't in our agency before. And then administration and grants, I will go through that a little more, or a lot more specifically when we get to it in the budget, but to get to a breakdown of that one right now, if you look at page 3 of the budget book, the commissioner's transmittal letter has a pie chart that's a more detailed breakdown than the second pie chart on that handout. So, for instance, that administration and grants breaks down to the three pie pieces that surround the ethanol piece there. Ag finance, which is our rural finance authority, loan programs, grants and assistance, which are especially the dairy diagnostics program and the WIC Farmers Market Nutrition Program are the biggest ones there. And then our administrative services for all the commissioner's office, finance, human resources, technology, and et cetera. And then you'll see toward the lower right-hand side of the chart our marketing and development broken into marketing and development separately. And then the other pieces from pesticide and fertilizer on around through lab services are the protection aspects, and each one of those represents a division of our agency. If we turn to the numbers overview for the department, which is on page 7 of the book, you'll see that our total budget is $158.9 million. That's, again, like it shows in the charts. But you'll see that, for example, the general fund appropriation there, $46.6 million per year. is the governor's recommendation, but the number right above that does say current appropriation. What this is just a continuation of the 07 appropriation out. I just wanted to point out that fact because that's not actually the base, what we would call the base for the general fund. Page 8 in the top one-third of the page there shows $37.57 million per year. That would be what we consider the base for the general fund. Then I'll move into the protection services program. Page 10 lists the four divisions of the agency that are in the protection services: pesticide and fertilizer, plant protection, dairy and food, and laboratory services. Pesticide and fertilizer starts on page 13. It's a largely regulatory program, and if you look at the numbers on page 15, you'll see that their budget is weighed very heavily towards the agricultural fund, the fees that they collect for their inspections and regulatory activities, $17.6 million for the biennium, as opposed to only $4 million coming from the general fund. On page 16, we have one change item in this area. What we'd like to do is just get rid of the separate aquatic pest control license that we have in statute. This is a sort of extra level license. We have pesticide applicator licenses in general, and this one was put into law in 1996, and it put some extra responsibilities on people who wanted to apply pesticides aquatically for vegetation or algae, including some waiting period at a journeyman status. And this appears to be burdensome, and we are getting complaints that we're not having enough registered pesticide applicators. So we believe that if we get rid of this special license and let them just go through the regular pesticide applicator license, which has testing component, competency component, that we will get enough people qualified to do the aquatic pesticide application that we need and respond to the public that's complaining that we don't have enough of these people out there now. We do have a slight loss in revenue for this change item because there is a difference in the amount of money we collect for the fee for this special license versus the other one. But that's a very small amount, just $2,000 per year.
Excuse me, Mr. Ernest. Would you say then that within the general education for the license that they still are getting the aquatic pest training?
Yes, I believe there is components, Madam Chair, of the testing that includes both aquatic and land application. I'm sure they look at how they do the testing all the time, and if they need to adjust that, they certainly could easily adjust it.
Thank you.
And starting on page 17, we have the Plant Protection Division. Regulates seed, noxious weeds, nursery stock, invasive exotic species, and apiaries, beekeepers, which obviously bees play an important part in the lives of plants. They work on pest exclusion, certification of commodities, and inspection activities. On page 19, you'll see the budget for this division. Also a lot of agricultural fund, but $4.7 million from the general fund. You have an initiative here to increase funding for the invasive species activities. We have had a lot of work recently with gypsy moth eradication, and now coming to our borders, another sort of interesting or ominous invasive species will be the emerald ash borer, which has destroyed thousands of trees and cost millions and millions of dollars around, especially the city of Detroit. And I believe Illinois just got a multi-million dollar award from the federal government to fight this invasion there. And so we hope to do all we can to keep it out of the state as best we can. So I'm just touching briefly on the initiatives, but page 21 then starts the Dairy and Food Inspection Division. We have inspection activities for food, animal feed, meat, dairy products. Make sure they're safe. We inspect farms, trucks, plants, stores, mobile concessions. On page 23, you'll see the overview of the budget for this division is skewed much more towards the general fund, $12.5 million for the biennium, and only $12.5 million from the general fund and $5.6 million approximately from the agricultural fund. They do collect fees and have dedicated accounts. On page 24, you'll see a change item inserted in there for informational purposes, just to make you aware that we have a dairy investment tax credit initiative not to be handled in this committee's bill, but just so you can see that. On page 25, we have an initiative for an electronic field inspection system. Now, this past year, the pesticide and fertilizer division has begun moving, it's not completely finished with it, but has begun moving all their testing and examining records online. What they do is they have computers in the field and enter the inspection information as they do it in the field. And so instantly we have that information then centrally or when they download it. And we would like to do that with dairy and food too, build on the same exact system to dairy and food inspections. This will capture a lot more information. What we do now with our paper-based system is bring the paper back to St. Paul and then enter the key information that we that we want to be tabulating, but we don't get it all in. And this is just one aspect of a lot of aspects which also can give us food safe information that may be helpful in food safety in case there are any kind of outbreaks, that we would have more information more readily available.
Thank you. Senator Ingebretson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Ernst, question page 19. I'll back a little bit further. You have full-time equivalents on the bottom. Why the drastic cut in 2007 from 85 to 51? Or am I not reading that right? FTEs there.
I have to check one thing. We had these, the Plant Protection Division and the Pesticide and Fertilizer Division were together as one division, and they split, and I'm wondering if that is looking a little funny that we didn't show. Well, you'll see on page 15 that the Pesticide and Fertilizer Division grew in the same period. I'm thinking we may not have assigned the split properly.
I think that might be the same. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. And dairy and food. Our next initiative in the dairy and food area is an emergency planning and response initiative. As more diseases and invasive, diseases and potential emergencies with the food, the health of the food supply are getting our attention these days. Avian influenza is one that's on the horizon. We're doing some planning activities for that in cooperation with other agencies, but we realize that as other agencies have, we need a position that's dedicated to focusing on coordination for emergency planning. In the food, in the agricultural area, the Board of Animal Health has some first-line responsibilities, but then our responsibilities kick in pretty rapidly after that with maintaining, in case any emergencies break out and things need to be quarantined or handled properly, especially if it's gotten to stores and things like that where our food inspectors are. So this initiative would give us a full-time person and some technical support to coordinate between our activities in our agency, with the board, with the Department of Health, and other agencies that might be involved with emergency management. Our next activity on page 28 is meat inspection field inspector. This is to add a new inspector. these inspectors travel around to the plants, and we've got a lot more requests for this kind of inspection, as especially some of the federal rules are getting a little more requiring more of these plants, and they would like us to do more inspections for them so that they can have their products inspected to meet the rules. So this is one person, and the travel and supports needed for that position. On page 29, we have an initiative for premise identification and record keeping. This is a beginning effort towards identifying farms, premises that handle animals. It doesn't go all the way towards an individual animal ID. That's an idea that might come down the road, but this would help us just get recorded where the facilities are, how big they are generally, and things like that, so that if we have emergencies, we can inform people in a timely manner. We know where the threats, the next closest facilities might be, and we can, again, with all the safety issues that we may face, respond to them in a better way. And on page 30, we have our last change item for this area, retail food handler plan inspection review. This is to increase the fees. Where we inspect, for example, grocery stores, food preparation areas, delis, and that, we also have an extra fee they can pay while they're constructing them, that we'll come in and look at their plans and how they're laying things out and advise them that if they lay it out a certain way, the food is more likely to be kept safe in refrigeration aspects, handling aspects, all those kind of issues. And so this is a voluntary service, but we are trying to recover the cost as best we can to do this, and so we need to raise the fee to do that. But it is a voluntary activity. Moving on to page 31 is the Laboratory Services Division. We have biological and chemical testing. A lot of the work the lab does is routine tests that come in from the field inspections as we inspect all the activities going on out there. And these we do a high volume of and do them pretty quickly. But we do have also the unusual tests where we suspect there might be contamination or mishandling. And if it's contamination, it may be a more detailed test that needs to be done. It may take more time and cost more. There are a lot of different interesting activities that the lab does. Our change item in this area is unfortunately another request for a rent increase. We did request new rent money when we moved into our new buildings, and unfortunately, with the lab building being a very unique and high-tech, state-of-the-art building, the Department of Administration, which is our landlord, was not able to accurately estimate what they should be charging us for rent. The rent includes things like the electricity and humidification and pressurization and high-tech things like that. And they did the best they could, I think, but they didn't quite get it right. And so this initiative is just to give us the money to be able to afford to keep the lights on and keep the machines running and all that. And I know
Mr. Ernst, one moment, please. Senator Coring.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just when you were talking about the buildings, I just had a question. I know there's been there has been, and I'm wondering if it's been corrected, a problem with parking. I did talk to one of the agriculture people who lives out in my area who has to go into the department, and it's very difficult to find a place to park and have to be somewhere where it's metered and have to run out and put money in the meter. Has that been taken care of? I guess that kind of a concern I was wondering about.
Madam Chair, Senator Coring, I know we've done some things. We've worked with the Department of Administration and the city to improve the parking. I believe the meters in front of the building are now 4 hours. There's a level of the Centennial ramp behind our building where people can park for up to 4 hours. And I don't believe I've heard problems with that recently.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Gene
Hugesson again here. Commissioner Corian, if I could just respond to that. As it relates to the parking issue, this is an area that when the building was initially proposed, there was actually a parking ramp to go along with it. That got deleted when it got to the legislature. So it was just then the building and the lab, that proposal that went ahead. At this particular time, we've actually resolved all the parking issues for employees. So they all have a parking in a relatively close proximity. It's done in such a way that the closer you are, the more you pay. And if you want a cheaper parking arrangement in an open lot that's a further walk, you can do that too. So relatively, people are relatively happy as it relates to the parking situation. Our challenge still remains, though, parking for our clientele, the people that would come to the department for a meeting type of a situation. When the state negotiator went ahead with the building originally, they did so with the understanding with the city of St. Paul that there would be four-hour meters rather than around the building. A new administration came into the mayor's office in St. Paul, and they changed it back to two-hour meters. And then also there's a number of commuter ride spots next to the building for commuter pools, people to park there too. So we, through the Department of and the Department of Administration, have tried to renegotiate with the city, and I think if we were not at four-hour meters yet, we're supposed to get those back. But they are expensive. The Department of Administration is coming forward with a piece that I think I saw in the bonding proposal that is acquiring some land next to the Department of Revenue, which is across the street of us. So there's a church that I understand is going to be vacated that will provide some opportunity for some more parking in that area as well. But that still remains a situation for us as it relates to those people that want to come into the department for various reasons, because we do testing there for some of the people, and it takes more than 2 hours to do those tests. And that has become a real issue, and so that's why we had to go back to the city of St. Paul and more or less suggest they need to reconsider what they did, because that caused some real problems.
And, Madam Chair, I just want to tell the Commissioner I really appreciate his thoughts on that. And I would just say that it certainly, and I don't know if I was here, but it certainly was short-sighted. You know, I have a lot of my constituents who come down here, and they say to me, where do I park? So if we want to have an open government, it's pretty hard to have an open government if somebody can't even find a place to park to come and see or go to the Ag Department or come to the legislature. So I hope we can address that. And,
Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
The Senate had the parking in their bill. The House would not go along.
Well, that doesn't surprise me at all.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I would say also if you'd like more information on the rent aspects of the lab building, we could have the Department of Administration come in and explain that to us a little more, to you a little more. Starting on page 35, then, is the promotion and marketing program, broken into the marketing services, Ag Marketing Services Division, and the Ag Resources Management and Development Division. Marketing Division begins on page 37, and I mentioned to you some of our more interesting new marketing activities with China. Page 39 shows their budget, about $4 million for the biennium from the general fund. They have some agricultural fees also that they collect there. We have an initiative on page 40 for some changes to the Minnesota Grown program. The first change would be to raise the licensing fee, the fee that people pay to use the Minnesota Grown label, from $5 to $20. Now this change, the people who use this license have asked for a beefing up of this program or a strengthening of this program. They feel that they get a lot of value out of marketing as Minnesota Grown, marketing their products as Minnesota Grown, and we hope to expand and duplicate the Minnesota labeling as also a Minnesota Grown organic labeling too. As the markets for organic products seem to be out there. And then we have asked for $65,000 a year also from the general fund to match that new money coming in from the license fees and increase our efforts to market these products that they're labeling.
Yes, Chair. Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Ernst, how does the fee get assessed? Is it the number of labels that they buy or the number of places, products that they're putting it on, or what exactly is the fee assessed on?
Madam Chair and Senator, I believe they just pay one time to use the label on whatever products they would like to use it on.
So, Madam Chair, $20 seems pretty modest. Thank you.
And Mr. Ernst, just to clarify, did you say that additional $20 is going to go to a whole new effort to include organics, or is that just part of the new expenditure?
Yes, Madam Chair, this money would go into the Minnesota Grown account in the Agricultural Fund, and part of it would be part of our new activities would be for an organic identity.
Thank you.
The Ag Development Program Division, Ag Resources Marketing and Development, Management and Development, starts on page 41. This division relies more heavily on the general fund, mostly on the general fund. On page 43, you'll see $8.3 million for the biennium. And our big initiative here is the Clean Water Legacy. This is a continuation of the multi-agency initiative with the Pollution Control Agency and other agencies to help do everything we can to keep the groundwater of the state clean. The program that the Agriculture Department is especially involved in is the Ag-BMP, the Ag Best Management Practices Loan Program, to give farmers loans to improve things that will help to keep the groundwater safe. We don't actually loan the money ourselves. We work with local banks to make the loans to the individual farmers. We would also continue we have $800,000 a year here to continue research on impaired waters as it involves the agricultural community.
Yes, Senator Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think this would be to Commissioner Hugesson. When we're thinking about this clean water legacy, and we've already gone by the Dairy Investment Program, Commissioner, but I'm wondering if we can't tie some of that dairy initiative to a policy initiative that would also address water around the usage at the dairy farm. And the reason that I'm kind of talking about that is because this initiative is certainly worthwhile, and it's been around a number of years, and we've struggled to get it, so I'm trying to get a little more all-encompassing and see if we can bring a little more support to the dairy initiative. And if anybody has any ideas, Commissioner or members, about how we can do that, I'm not carrying that bill, but wherever that is, we should kind of revisit that maybe.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Squire. Certainly the area of dairy comes into play there. And one of the things I might would mention, too, is that members may remember or will recall that we're spending close to $1 million a year on some dairy initiatives as it relates to doing what we can to help our dairy farmers become more profitable in doing some of these things or accessing even some federal funds and so forth. I just recently created, in fact, the letters went out yesterday to a group of people that applied to be part of an advisory council for the use of that $1 million because I think what you're referring to there's new ways or new things that we need to be considering as it relates to how we are spending existing funds in a way that becomes more bang for the buck, perhaps, than what we've been getting up to this point, and likewise how we could access some other entity, other funds out there. And so this group that, which will probably be announced tomorrow if it wasn't already today, includes a broad spectrum of people from around the state to different aspects of the dairy industry. And I think that the suggestion you just made is part of what we can take to those folks and have them be considered as well. Because certainly there's a lot of things that come into play as it relates to this issue.
Very good, Commissioner.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Ernest?
Madam Chair, then, starting on page 45 is the value-added agricultural products program. This program is basically ethanol, although we do envision that it can broaden into other value-added products, and specifically what the governor's budget is proposing is the cellulosic fuels, the gasification to start with process, non-oxygen, not involving oxygen, so broadening it somewhat. On page 47, you'll see listed the 10 plants that are still in our 10-year producer payment program. Two of these plants, the plants in Bingham Lake and Winthrop, will graduate from the program in 2008. They'll have their 10 years in. And then the program will completely end in 2010. That will be the last year for regular producer payments for these plants. We do, however, since budget restrictions forced us to pay lower amounts than the 20 cents per gallon rate that statute provides for, we do have some deficiencies to make up for, and we expect that 2013 will be the year if our base level funding of $15.1 million for this portion of this program, the ethanol producer payments, it stays the same, would be 2013 when we would have all the deficiencies paid off.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that this gasification is, you know, a pretty good initiative. While we're looking at the producer payments and talking about their expiration, I think perhaps we should consider expanding the ethanol producer payments to cellulosic ethanol plants. There are bills being drafted on that, and members, when you're thinking about what we're doing here, I certainly think that that's something we should think about. You know, it's going to take a couple of years anyway, probably three or four, to have a cellulosic ethanol actually making ethanol. So we've got some time there, and some of these other plants will be offline by then, I believe. So it's certainly should be part of our ag discussion, I think, this year. And I see the commissioner coming up. Maybe you have something you'd like to add, Commissioner.
Thank you. Yes. Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Senator Scoy, and committee members, as part of the governor's budget that was released Monday, it didn't really show it per se in the initial funding, but the governor is actually proposing that there be a program, not necessarily the same as what the ethanol producer payments have been, but similar type of a program for, again, as much as perhaps 10 years. Going out down the road, and I believe his commitment or his suggestion there is that we, in essence, look at about $90 million total to be moving in that direction. Our recommendation would be, and the language that the administration will be putting forward on this will suggest that we not craft the specific language for that this year, but that we put the process in place to come back with a recommendation for next year to look at something more specific. And the reason being is that I think we want to be careful to make sure that what we're going to be doing in Minnesota can leverage and or tie into the federal farm bill. And knowing that that's going to be done yet this year, and the work that you know we're planning on doing with Congressman Peterson and some of that, I think it would give us an opportunity. And so what we're looking at is you know, we don't want to be too specific and too locked down, and would suggest that we perhaps, together with legislators and some administration folks, including the Department of Agriculture, obviously, come back with the final proposal for the 2008 session with some of these parameters in place.
Thank you, Commissioner. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, as I sit next to Senator Dill, I know he's worked on this in the past. I think it might be something that we should look at as some kind of sliding fee on the payment as the price of, you know, the gasoline goes up or something. Maybe it'd be a declining amount. I think Senator Dill has worked on that in the past. The other thing that and this isn't for the Department of Ag, but for the members to be thinking about, I think that in order for Minnesota to take full advantage of our opportunities with regard to ethanol, we should take a little look at the permitting process for the ethanol plants. Thank you, Madam
Thank
Chair.
Thank you, Senator Scoy. Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is ethanol related. You mentioned ethanol in your opening comments, Commissioner, and I just are you perceiving where these ethanol plants are being sited now a potential problem to getting the as much corn to these areas as they're going to need?
Madam Chair, Senator Scogin, in some areas, yes. I can relate to one personally in my own neighborhood because I farm and live in Martin County, or that's where my permanent home is when I'm not here in St. Paul. We are in the process, they're actually in the process of right now building two 100 million gallon facilities 5 miles apart. And this is in the county that has the largest hog population of any, you know, any county in the state as well. So there's going to be some transportation issues as it relates to that particular area. We're also looking at a situation that Iowa and South Dakota are probably on close to being on the verge of being corn deficit. South Dakota is already, in the sense that they have to re-import some corn into South Dakota to feed their livestock industry and ethanol facilities. So there's going to be some areas that this is going to be you know, somewhat of an issue. I think this isn't such a big thing for the corn, though, as much as it will be for the cellulose facilities when we get to that point, because those facilities are going to require considerably more volume to produce a gallon of ethanol than even corn. So in that particular situation, the siting is going to become even more crucial than what we're looking at now at this point. And so that's something we're certainly going to want to keep in mind.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any other questions? Senator Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, the other day, I believe you were here when Dr. Tillman was presenting his work, and there's a blend that they call for. Is there any light that you can shed on that? How would that, you know, if we adopted a second-generation approach, as Senator Scoy mentioned in his comments, and that was a blend of corn with prairie grasses to get the maximum output. Do you know how much that would cut the use of corn production by the ethanol plants?
Madam Chair, Senator Kubley, I don't. Not offhand. I do know, though, that to produce ethanol from corn and produce ethanol from a cellulose material takes two different processes. So you're not going to be able to necessarily mix them together. It's going to take separate equipment, even if it's at the same location, to do that. But at the same time, though, I do think that's the model that we will see. We will see some of the existing ethanol plants be looking at adding cellulosic conversion to ethanol because they do have some equipment there that can be used, the storage tanks, the transportation system, the rail lines, and that sort of thing. So there would be some economies of that co-locating at the same place.
Well, Madam Chair and Commissioner, I guess it was my understanding, and I may be mistaken on that, but it was my understanding that there was a point in the process of generating ethanol from prairie grasses that you would add corn to the process that would enhance the output of both products. Now, I could be wrong on that. I guess that was just the way I understood it, but I was wondering, you know, if the current plants adopted a process like that, it would seem to me that it would considerably scale back the amount of our corn production that was needed in that, and I just wondered if there was any information available on that.
Madam Chair, Senator, at this particular point, I don't have it, but it's certainly something we could be watching for.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for the Commissioner? Mr. Ernest, you may continue.
Madam Chair, page 49 outlines this initiative. You'll see $5 million in each year, fiscal year 08 and 09, and then $9 million in 10 and 11. On page 49 there, we talk about the grants to facilities wishing to install gasification technologies. That's the first this coming biennium, 08, 09, the goal of that. You'll see some specifics on what we're thinking on that at the bottom of that page. And then on the back of the page talks about the $9 million $6 million targeted towards financial incentives and $3 million for potentially for payments, and then the vision would be to carry each of those out 10 years, so 60 and 30 million respectively. And I would point out in this area, also in fiscal year 6, we had a one-time appropriation of $500,000 for the installation of E85 pumps at gas stations. We gave out about 54 grants, so they were to be maximum $15,000 each. It was reimbursing half of the cost, up to half of the cost. They averaged about $10,000 each then of those 50. And then this continuation of pump grants would go with the Department of Commerce under the governor's budget recommendation. There's some money to continue trying to get pumps in all parts of the state. And then we also have $100,000 a year in this budget continuing for ethanol efficiency research to research the effect of ethanol, excuse me, on fuel systems materials. So we cover more aspects than just the actual production. Moving to page 51, we've got the grants administration portion of the budget program. See grants and assistance, rural financing, and administrative services there, the three portions of this program. On page 53, there's a discussion of our grants and assistance programs. Our biggest one is the Dairy Development Profitability and Enhancement Program. That's about $1 million a year, and about three-quarters of that goes directly to the dairy diagnostics teams out in the field. Our second biggest program here is the Farmers Market Nutrition Coupon Program, which gives checks to people in nutritional need to buy food in the farmers markets. other programs that fall under here are listed in the box there, just to, for example, the county fair prize money is in this portion of the budget. Then going to page 56 is our rural financing division. We call this rural financing because it's mainly the Rural Finance Authority, which has its own board, which governs how loans for those various programs go out. But there's one federal program and some state-only programs that aren't under the board. So it's a little broader than just the board, the Rural Finance Authority itself. You can see some statistics on the activity that this area has done. I would point out that we did have a problem running out of our capitalization for getting the money out. And again, I would say that we don't loan the money ourselves. We work with the local banks to make the actual loans. But we will ask for $10 million in the in bond funds this year to get some more money to make these loans. We did have to cut off taking applications for some of the programs this past year because we did run out of the money. We did, I believe, $13 million in loans last year until we ran out of the money, and so we would need at least $10 million to keep going and reopen those programs. So that you'll see in a separate bill, I believe. And then the administrative services is discussed on page 59, all the basic agency-wide services, and you'll see that this is a split between the general fund on page 61, the budget for this activity split between the general fund and the special revenue fund, which is, as I described before, the indirects that we collect from the other non-general fund sources of money. We have one agency-wide initiative, which is a compensation adjustment. This is a part of the governor's budget in all agencies, and it represents 2% on the salaries. Of course, the actual increase is negotiated in the contracts, but this will help us to be able to pay the rates that we get negotiated. After that, we have the revenue summaries, and I would point out after the page that I referenced, page 63, there is a summary of broken down in detail of all the federal monies we get. The total of the federal fund summary will correspond to the revenue summary on page 63. It's revenue summaries, it's not the spending, so it's not going to correspond to the numbers we have on the budgeted side, which we've budgeted a little less just in case something happens with the feds. but there's a detailed summary of all the federal money we get there, and that would be the end of the document.
Members have any questions for Mr. Ernest? Okay, hearing none. Thank you, Mr. Ernest. Anything additional you want to say to the committee?
It's, Madam Chair, thank you. It's a pleasure to be back here. I sat on that side of the table for over 10 years, so it's nice to be back in this beautiful building.
Great. Thank you very much. Yes, Senator Dill.
And Madam Chair, Mr. Ernest, you probably said this at the beginning, but what is the difference between the last biennial budget and the current proposed biennial budget in terms of money?
All right. If you look at page 3, the transmittal letter, there are different ways of looking at this, Senator. If we look at the spending that we actually spent, the dollars we spent in 06 and 07, this budget is 7.6% larger. If we compare it from the base, which we take out some of the one-time money, it's 13% larger. So it's a little bit more once we took out the one-time. General fund, new general fund is $18.4 million. That's $10 million for next gen, $4.5 million for clean water, $900,000 for rent, $700,000 for invasive species. Those are the largest initiatives. And the only other thing that's changing from the base is the couple small initiatives in the agricultural fund fee changes. That's about $25,000 total. So it's mainly all the changes are in the general fund.
Thank you, Mr. Ernest. Any other questions or comments from the board? Okay. Our next meeting is Tuesday, January 30th at 3 o'clock. It'll just be a one-hour hearing because of the Will Steger event. And we'll be hearing testimony from the veterans organizations. And if members would please leave their white three-ring binders on the table. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
We object. Yes, we will adjourn. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. That's great.